106.6.
Okay, that was the Ting Tings with We Walk. I'm Dom Robinson, and you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. It's a weekly show where I look for the week's releases in movies and video games, there's some news, plus the charts, and a look at what's new on TV. DVDFever.co.uk is a non-profit website and really deserves your attention. And if you've got anything to say about anything you hear on the show, do get in touch via the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. Okay, so what's in the first hour? It's all about films, and this first hour we start off with a review where Tom Cruise heads into another Mission Impossible with a Ghost Protocol. There's the top 10 movie charts, new cinema releases including Dark Shadows and Piranha 3DD, and also new Blu-ray and DVD releases including Warhorse and Men in Black 1 and 2 on Blu-ray, and they're on Blu-ray for the first time. Now, the Ghost Protocol part of the Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol title makes it sound super cool and exciting, but in reality, it's just a coded way of saying that the entire Impossible Mission Force, IMF, have been disavowed before they've even started proper, and that this has come about because of what happens early on. As the film begins, the IMF team break Ethan Hunt, Tom Cruise, out of a Russian jail, the reason for his residency being something that will be revealed later on, and they're after a file containing Russian nuclear launch codes, which was being carried by Agent Hanaway, Josh Holloway, who was assassinated in a bodged op run by Agent Jane Carter, Paula Patton. The codes are sought after by someone with the codename Cobalt, and things then go tits up for the team shortly after they're set up to take the fall for blowing up the Kremlin. This makes their job all the more difficult because the IMF secretary, Tom Wilkinson, drops a bomb about them all being disavowed by the government, and so if they were to attempt to clear their name, they'll have to do it off the books. Now, when it came to the original movie, for me, that film was perfect from start to finish. The sequel was mostly a pedestrian affair, while the third was mostly a return to form, especially having a cracking baddie in the form of Philip Seymour Hoffman. This one? Well, a cracking baddie is definitely what this fourth instalment is lacking. They're all faceless Russians who just want to combine nuclear codes with a device that requires them in order to launch a nuclear missile. So a very pedestrian plot. Also, I don't like the way it stops being at all serious and is played like a carry-on film, given the inclusion of Simon Pegg in a major role. I mean, just what is it that J.J. Abrams sees in him that wants him to make him a big Hollywood star? You know, space, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, yes. Hollywood blockbusters? Definitely not. All that said, Jeremy Renner, as Agent Brandt, puts in a bit of a comic aside as well. But he's not a comic mastermind. There's some great direction used, which gives some tension, but it's overlong and gets sluggish after we leave the Dubai Hotel. There's also a change in direction for the plot at one point that renders an entire scene completely worthless around two-thirds of the way in. In fact, it basically peaks, literally, with the Burj Khalifa tower climb and only really engages you for the final fight, so to speak. There's also an uncredited cameo from Ving Rhames as MI old hand Luther Strickle, but since he does nothing and adds nothing, I can't see the point for his inclusion. In addition, it does seem very violent for a 12 certificate with neck crackings and bone twistings on legs, even if some of these are done just off camera. Presented in the original theatrical ratio in 1080p high definition, the quality of the print is crisp and clear with no problems on the disc. Audio-wise, the film is presented in DTS 7.1 HD Master Audio, and it goes without saying that a Mission Impossible film will kick ass from the start until the end with gunshots, explosions and everything else. The extras are as follows. Well, for what we've got. We've got Mission Accepted, which lasts about 30 minutes, and director Brad Bird gives a personal account of how they filmed all of Tom Cruise's stunts up in the Burj Khalifa Tower, and he performed them all himself, as you might expect. This also includes a chat from various members for the crew, including stunt coordinator David Schultz, who was a professional climber for 30 years. And for the second half of this featurette, it moves on to the Vancouver car manufacturing plant, where the final fight takes place, and you will learn more about that scene when you watch the film. There's a short featurette called Impossible Missions, lasts about 6 minutes, which shows brief pieces about the sandstorm and props like the briefcase, but I'll say no more to avoid spoilers, but I'm sure they could have gone into a lot more detail in 6 minutes. There's deleted and alternate scenes, which is only 5 minutes long, and with the option of director's commentary, disappointingly there's only three of them here. I'd have put back the second one, but that's about it. The third could also go back in, but it basically repeats the idea of what we've already seen, and obviously I can't go into detail without spoiling the film, so that's as much as I'll say there. And there's also an audio description track for those who want that sort of thing. In fact, on the whole, it's a very disappointing set of extras. One of the biggest films of the year and barely anything to talk about? I did not expect that. I'd at least have liked to include the IMAX segment shot while Cruise went up the tower. So, overall, well, I mean, the first film I'd get, you know, was a massive 10 out of 10. Second one was 6. Third one, 7, possibly 8. I don't know whether it quite 6 down as a 7, to be honest, but this one, like number 2, it's a 6 out of 10. Picture and sound, a 10 out of 10. Extras, 2, very, very poor. Overall, though, just the way it balances out with the picture and the sound, 7 out of 10. So, you know, if, like me, you're going to watch a Mission Impossible film, whatever happens, so, you know, it's definitely worth a rental at least. Okay, so in a moment we'll have the movie charts, but first we'll have a bit of music. We'll have Gomez and Whipping Piccadilly. This is 106.6. 106.6. Okay, so you're back with the DVD Fever show, and this section we'll have a look at the top 10 movie charts. And as I said before many times, for many reasons I've given before, it's the US movie charts I go through here. And we start at number 1 with Think Like a Man, which has gone straight in. And it hasn't gone straight in, it's been around for a little while, but it's taken $17.6 million in this week. So it's quite low, actually, for a film that's at number 1. Anyway, four women have given up on getting their man to do what they want until they find a how-to book written by Steve Harvey. They start using his advice about relationships, and their men start falling in line, until the men discover what the women have been doing. And then the war is on. Starring Michael Ealy, most recently seen in Underworld Awakening as the cop, as well as the superb series Sleeper Cell, Jerry Ferrara, Megan Good, and also Romany Malco, a.k.a. Conrad from the first few series of Weeds. Now, this idea sounds appalling. But from the trailer, it actually looks half decent. It's one I'd rather wait for the Blu-ray or DVD than watch on the big screen, though. Yeah, if it does suck, then that's two hours of your life that you won't get back either way. Number 2, we've got The Pirates in an Adventure with Scientists, where pirate captain Hugh Grant sets out on a mission to defeat his rivals Black Bellamy, Jeremy Piven, and Cutlass Liz, Salma Hayek, for a Pirate of the Year award. The quest takes captain and his crew from the shores of Blood Island to the foggy streets of Victorian London. This is the latest movie from the Aardman Animations, who brought us Creature Comforts, Chicken Run, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, and Ned Miliband, Wallace and Gromit. I really like the look of this. Yeah, I normally hate animations, but excuse me, those are ones that are all in CGI, because they just seem to have no heart to them whatsoever. But Aardman always seemed to pull out all the stops, and this one does look like a must-see. Number 3, we've got The Hunger Games, which has taken $372 million to date in America. Now, starring Jennifer Lawrence, Josh Hutcherson, Liam Hemsworth, Elizabeth Banks, and Woody Harrelson, I understand this is based on a series of books, and as someone who is a complete book philistine and always waits for the films, this really does look a bit on the average side. I know it's also been cut to get a 12 certificate in the UK, so you know, if I do check it out, it'll be I'll watch it on Blu-ray or something, because by then, you know, they'll have done like a special edition 15 certificate that has all the cuts put back in. Number 4, we have The Lucky One, where, excuse me, my voice has just gone today. Now, it's just, you know, the reason why I've gone like this. U.S. Marine Sergeant Logan Theobald, Zac Efron is a U.S. Marine, do me a favour, returns from his third tour of duty in Iraq, with unfortunately still alive, with the one thing he credits with keeping him alive, a photograph he found of a woman he doesn't even know. Discovering her name is Beth, played by Taylor Schilling, and where he lives, he shows up at her door and ends up taking a job at a family-run local kennel. Despite her initial mistrust and the complications in her life, a romance develops between them, giving Logan hope that Beth could do much more than his, could be much more than his good luck charm. Oh, wow. Well, I thought it would be a load of syrupy goop, and yeah, I was right. It says it's from the director of The Notebook, which says an awful lot. Avoid that one, it's awful. Number 5, The 5-Year Engagement, which took $10.6 million in its opening week. Now, exactly 1 year after Tom Solomon, Jason Segel, meets Violet Barnes, Emily Blunt, he surprises her with a ring. By all accounts, Tom and Violet are destined for their happily ever after. However, this engaged couple are just getting tripped up along the long walk on the long walk down the aisle. Well, watching the trailer, there's a couple of amusing moments in it, but overall it all looks kind of forced. Yes, the two leads are very likeable, but do we really need another film like this? No, we don't. Talking of repetition, we now have Safe with Jason Statham. Now May, Catherine Chan, is a young girl whose memory holds a priceless numerical code and finds herself pursued by the triads, the Russian mob and corrupt New York cops. Coming to her aid is ex-cage fighter Luke, Jason Statham, whose life was destroyed by the gangsters on May's tail. He helps her out, and the baddies repay this by murdering his family, so he's out for revenge. I think anything with Jason Statham, you know, you just know what to expect, but I'll definitely catch this at some point, because they are, you know, a bit of a laugh anyway. You know, it's an hour and a half of just nonsense, you know what to expect, and that's what you get. Now, a few months after the UK release, The Raven has finally arrived in America, but it's only taken 7.29 million on its opening weekend. And in this gritty thriller, Edgar Allan Poe, John Cusack, joins forces with the young Baltimore detective, Luke Evans, to hunt down a mad serial killer who's using Poe's own works as a basis in a string of brutal murders. Directed by James McTeague, V for Vendetta and Ninja Assassin, the film also stars Alice Eve, Sex and the City 2, Brendan Gleeson from In Bruges, and Oliver Jackson-Cohen from Faster. Now, the trailer makes this look like a part remake of various films based on Poe's books, but throwing Poe himself into the mix. However, it just didn't really grab me at all, so that's why I didn't get to see it. Number 8, we have Chimpanzee, which is a documentary about a 3-year-old chimp narrated by Tim Allen. Sounds riveting, doesn't it? No. Now, I sighed when I saw what's next, because I really was expecting nothing at all. But we'll see. It's the Three Stooges. Yes, it just screams remake, doesn't it? Left on the doorstep of an orphanage run by nuns, newborns Mo, Larry and Curly grow up finger-poking and nyuk-nyuk-nyuking and woo-woo-woo, all to uncharted levels of knuckle-headed misadventure. Now, their childhood home may have closed due to financial difficulties, but Larry, Curly and Mo, employed as the foster home's inept maintenance men, are determined to come to the rescue. Only the Three Stooges could become embroiled in an oddball murder plot, while stumbling into starring roles in a phenomenally successful TV reality show. Now, starring Sean Hayes, Will Sasso and Chris Diamantopoulos as Larry, Curly and Mo, and directed by the Farrelly brothers, I hate to say it, but this did make me laugh a lot. So, you know, damn me, I'm going to hell, because I was expecting this to be absolute and I found it really, really funny. So it doesn't come out until sort of late August in the UK, so it's quite a while to go for that one. And to round off the top 10, at number 10 we have Cabin in the Woods. Okay, so a bit more music, and then we're going to have a look at the new cinema releases out this Friday. This is 106.6. 106.6. Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show, and this section we'll be having a look at the new cinema releases out this Friday, starting with Dark Shadows. In the year 1752, Joshua and Naomi Collins, with young son Barnabas, set sail from Liverpool, England, to start a new life in America. But even an ocean was not enough to escape the mysterious curse that has plagued their family. 2 decades pass, and Barnabas, Johnny Depp, has a world at his feet, or at least the town of Collinsport, Maine. The master of Collinwood Manor, Barnabas, is rich and powerful, an invertebrate playboy, until he makes a grave mistake of breaking the heart of Angelique Bouchard, Eva Green. A witch in every sense of the word, Angelique dooms him to a fate worse than death, turning him into a vampire, and then burying him alive. 2 centuries later, Barnabas is inadvertently freed from his tomb and emerges into the very changed world of 1972. The year I was born, actually, so that's, I think I'm 30. He returns to Collinwood Manor to find that his once grand estate has fallen into ruin. The dysfunctional remnants of the Collins family have fared little better, each harbouring their own dark secrets. Matriarch Elizabeth Collins Stoddard, Michelle Pfeiffer, has called upon living psychiatrist Dr. Julia Hoffman, Helena Bonham Carter, to help her with her family troubles. Directed by Tim Burton, so unsurprisingly starring Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter, and there's also Michelle Pfeiffer, Eva Green, Johnny Lee Miller, Chloe Grace Moretz, Christopher Lee, and Alice Cooper as himself. Now, I'm not one for Tim Burton movies in general, and often find them quite so-so, but this one does seem intriguing, so I will check it out sometime. Oh, by the way, all trailers for all these films are on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow, and that includes the top 10 that you heard before. Also out this Friday, we have Piranha 3DD. Now, having awoken from their spring break extravaganza at Lake Victoria, the swarm heads upstream where they look to make a meal out of Big Wet, a local water park where when it comes to fun, nobody does it wetter. Though they came to get wet, get loaded and get some, the staff and patrons get more than they bargained for when they must face the fiercest, most bloodthirsty piranhas yet. Led by the strong-willed, studious Maddie and her friends, Barry and Kyle, the trio must dive in and take on these man-eating creatures using every ounce of their being. But can they be stopped? Now, with the tagline, double the action, double the terror, double the D's, it stars Katrina Bowden, Danielle Panabaker, Christopher Lloyd, Ving Rhames, Alison Mack, Gary Busey and David Hasselhoff. And it looks as silly as I'd expect, and while I haven't seen the original, this one does look a laugh. Ving Rhames' character with no legs, who has to put on prosthetic ones, does owe a lot to the Machine Gun Girl, and if you've seen that, you'll know what I mean. Third film out this Friday is How I Spent My Summer Vacation. Now, career criminal Mel Gibson, nabbed by Mexican authorities, is placed in a tough prison where he learns to survive with the help of a 9-year-old boy. Now, starring Mel Gibson, simply named as Driver, plus Peter Stormare, Dean Norris and Bob Gunton, this actually looks pretty decent, and it has had a good reaction in the US, getting 8.4 out of 10 on the Internet Movie Database. Although it never got a cinema release in the US and just went straight to video on demand, so clearly US distributors are still cautious about Mel and the adverse reaction that he courts. It's making its way around Europe and the rest of the world over the next few months, though, so it'll be interesting to see how it does. And it only had a $20 million budget, which is nothing in Hollywood terms today. It's not made anything like that back at all yet, but, you know, see how it goes. Then we have Jeff, who lives at home. Now, dispatched from his basement room on an errand for his mother, Slacker Jeff, Jason Segel playing against type as a slacker, might discover his destiny, finally, when he spends the day with his brother as he tracks down his possibly adulterous wife. Also starring Ed Helms, Susan Sarandon, Judy Greer and Ray Dawn Chong, this looks like it's trying to be a thoughtful Jason Segel film. But for thoughtful, it just comes across as boring. So give this one a miss. Finally, we have Café de Flore, which it says is a love story between a man and a woman and between a mother and a son. A mystical and a fantastical odyssey on love. Starring Vanessa Paradis, Kevin Parent and Alain Frolon, this talks about finding your soulmate for a second time in your life and doesn't look the least bit intriguing. In postmodern terms, it just looks like it's being weird for the sake of being weird. And that rounds up all the films out for this Friday. So it looks like, you know, really the only thing I'd sort of really want to go see, I suppose, is Piranha 3DD, but How I Spent My Summer Vacation also looks worth a watch. Okay, so have a bit of music and then we'll have the new Blu-rays and DVDs out this week. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson. And in this section, we'll have a look at some of the new Blu-rays and DVDs out this week, starting with War Horse. Now, from director Steven Spielberg comes War Horse, an epic adventure for audiences of all ages. Set against a sweeping canvas of rural England and Europe during the First World War, War Horse begins with a remarkable friendship between a horse named Joey and a young man called Albert, who tames him and trains him. That's a bit rude. When they are forcefully parted, the film follows Joey's extraordinary journey as he moves through the war, changing and inspiring the lives of all those he meets, British cavalry, German soldiers, and a French farmer and his granddaughter, before the story reaches its emotional climax in the heart of no man's land. The First World War is experienced through the journey of this horse, an odyssey of joy and sorrow, passionate friendship and high adventure. War Horse is one of the greatest stories of friendship and war. A best-selling book by author Michael Moore Purjo, it was turned into an award-winning stage production, and now comes to the screen in an epic adaptation by one of the great directors in film history. Starring newcomer Jeremy Irvine as Albert Narricot, plus Peter Mullen, Emily Watson, David Thewlis, Benedict Cumberbatch and Toby Kebbell. I've seen clips of this and I know it'll, you know, I know it's just a big, big film and all that kind of palaver, but it's not the kind of film that really interests me because it's just one of those films where they tell you that you must go and see it. you know, especially in those adverts where they, when it came out at the cinema, they're saying, "Oh, it's all brilliant. Oh, I'm a member of the public. I don't think it's bloody marvellous. Got to go and see it, haven't you?" No, I haven't got to go and see it. Just, it just doesn't interest me whatsoever. Go away. Stop talking to me. That's my problem, and I'll deal with it. Yeah, so I'm not going to go see this. Also, this week we have Doctor Who Ace Adventures box set. In these two classic stories, Ace joins the Seventh Doctor aboard the TARDIS, where she's soon battling a biomechanoid and liberating a world where just feeling sad can get you shot. The first adventure is Dragonfire, and on the planet Svartos, the Doctor, Sylvester McCoy, and Mel unexpectedly encounter an old friend, Sabalom Glitz. Joined by Ace, a teenage waitress with a love for explosives, the group ventures off to find the fabled Dragonfire treasure. Features in this include an audio commentary, deleted and extended scenes, trivia subtitles, video and audio restoration, coming soon trailer, Radio Times billings, making of documentary, photo gallery, Danny Bang documentary, and the Doctor's Strange Love documentary. And the other adventure is the Happiness Patrol. And on the planet Terra Alpha, the population constantly displays happy smiles. Anyone feeling remotely glum disappears quickly. Having heard disturbing rumours, the Doctor, Sylvester McCoy, and Ace arrive to topple the entire regime. And the extras in this include an audio commentary, an Ace Wishes Blue Peter Happy Birthday archive clip, an isolated music score, deleted and extended scenes, trivia subtitles, video and audio restoration, a coming soon trailer, Radio Times billings, a making of documentary, and a photo gallery. And also this week we have The Syndicate, which, well, I'll just, you know, give you the information. It's a brand new five-part drama that follows the five workers at a cut-price supermarket in Leeds, whose lives are turned upside down after they jointly win the lottery, going from facing redundancy and battling the present economic downturn to having more money than they ever dreamt of. Timothy Spall plays supermarket manager Bob, whose newfound wealth cannot mask his persistent health problems. Joanna Page plays single mother Leanne, who, although welcoming a financial freedom, is worried about the consequences that the win will bring. They are joined by the supermarket colleagues, dog-loving Denise, played by Lorraine Bruce, and brother Stuart, played by Matthew McNulty, and Jamie, played by Matthew Lewis. And The Syndicate is written by Kay Miller, whose previously critically acclaimed dramas include Band of Gold, Playing the Field, Fat Friends, The Chase, and A Passionate Woman. And, well, I've discussed this programme when it started on TV, after one episode, it was clear it's another of those dramas that's just for women. And it was just appalling. It was just boring as hell. Just, you know, if you're a woman, you might be interested. But if you're a bloke, just give it a wide berth. Okay, we'll have a few more Blu-rays and DVDs in a moment, but then have a bit of music first, and then you'll hear what those DVDs are. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back for the final section of the DVD Fever show for this first hour. I'm still continuing the new Blu-rays and DVDs out this week, and we start off with, or continue rather, with Pillow Talk, a limited edition digibook, out on Blu-ray for the first time. An interior decorator, Jan Morrow, Doris Day, and composer Brad Allen, Rock Hudson, share a phone line. Brad keeps the line occupied all day talking to his girlfriends. Rock Hudson, girlfriends. Anyway, which annoys Jan terribly, and animosity between them builds up. They, however, have never met, and when by chance Brad sees Jan, he decides to add her to a list of conquests. Knowing how she feels about him, he possesses an innocent Texan country boy named Rex Stetson to win her. My eyes have gone today. He poses, not possesses. He doesn't possess an innocent Texan country boy. That would sound very, very odd indeed. I know he's dead, but, you know, don't speak ill of the dead unless they deserve it. He poses as an innocent Texan country boy named Rex Stetson to win her, a plan which never seems to work. I'm talking about the plan which seems to work. I'm crying out loud. Anyway, that's enough of the description. There's bonus features, which includes a 44-page booklet, including exclusive script pages, original posters, lobby cards, advertisements, and upgraded photographs. Back in Bed with Pillow Talk, a 22-minute featurette. Chemistry 101, the film due of Doris Day and Rock Hudson. Feature commentary with film historians Jeff Bond, Julie Kergo, and Nick Redman. Theatrical trailer. And also some small featurettes, which are all based on the fact that it's 100 years of Universal Films. There's restoring the classics, the Carl Lamy era, and unforgettable characters. Also out this week is Men in Black 1 and 2. Now on Blu-ray for the first time. And Men in Black was one of the great, one of the many Marvel comic screen adaptations, and the success of the summer in 1997, coming only a year after Will Smith's other lucrative smash hit, Independence Day. Now the men are only known by a single initial, and are the alien FBI. You see, you may not realise it, but aliens are really alive and well and living amongst us. There are some good ones, such as Willy in V, but most of them are bad, and as the film begins, it's up to Agent K, Tommy Lee Jones, to stamp them out. Agent D is due for retirement soon. He taught K everything he knows, so now it's up to K to teach his new recruit J, aka James Edwards, Will Smith, the secrets of the organisation. But once you're in, your original identity is erased, and when your time comes to retire, your mind will be wiped of all MIB knowledge. The plot is simple as J and K rid the world of aliens, gearing up for a spectacular finale and recruiting new Agent L, aka Deputy Medical Examiner Linda Fiorentino, in the process. Vincent D'Onofrio, probably best known for his appearance as Private Pyle, the fat one in Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket, is Edgar, starting off as a simple farmer, but it's his body that the chief alien decides to reside in, taking his truck with it. Overall, Men in Black is a great fun film with brilliant special effects, sound and extras to match. It's just a shame that, when it came out originally on DVD, the picture wasn't up to scratch, and there was, hopefully the Blu-ray will sort that out, but because it's a PG, there was a couple of slight language cuts where the word prick was replaced with jerk, and it's a PG, I know it's PG, but are they really worthy of a 12 certificate? I don't think so, and you know, they could go all out and bother to re-rate them as a 12, for these new Blu-ray releases, but they haven't. It's just the original censored versions. So, may as well buy the American version then. Men in Black 2, well, that was just dire, I thought, but the reason these are out is because Men in Black 3 gets a cinema release on May 25th. Also out is Clone, where Rebecca, Eva Green, and Thomas, Matt Smith, had a winning formula. Reunited childhood sweethearts, they overcame every obstacle which stood in their way, but now comes their biggest challenge. Can they overcome death? When Thomas dies suddenly, Rebecca struggles to live in a world without him. Consumed by desperation, she even contemplates the idea of cloning. Can she bring Thomas back once more? Will she be able to live with the consequences if she does? More importantly, will anyone discover her shocking secret? Now, I say it stars Matt Smith, obviously from Doctor Who, and this dropped on my door the other day, and so, I'll take a look at it, and I will review it soon for you, but I just thought, I heard about this recently, I thought, it's going to be a big film in the cinema, and I found out it's only had, limited cinema releases in, a couple of sort of film, conventions. I found out it was originally called Womb and came out in 2010, or at least it was released originally in 2010. I'm just amazed it's just been hidden for so long. I mean, especially because it's got Matt Smith in it. I would have thought now's the time to just stick it on the big screen because he's a massive, name in TV these days. They could have made an absolute, just thrown a bit of hype behind it and just, got a real big audience to it. Which leads me to think that it's probably not going to be very good. But the proof of the pudding will be in the eating, and I say I'll bring a review for you of that soon. Some of the films out this week, we have Buck, also one called Four, very descriptive, I know. Harry Kiri, Death of a Samurai, Mask Maker, Transit, War of the Arrows, and one which sounds interesting, Strippers versus Werewolves, which has got Ali Bastion and Adele Silver. So that sounds interesting. Some TV series and other stuff. We've got Big Fat Gypsy Wedding Series 2, Born and Bred, the complete Series 1 to 4. We've got Face Checker Series 2, Fascinating Aida Cheap Flights, Ice Road Truckers, the complete Season 5, and Ice Road Truckers Deadliest Road Season 2, The Invaders, the Believer's Box, King of Queens, complete box set, The Only Way is Essex Series 4, Paul and Pauline Calf's Video Diaries, River Cottage Veg, Solo, the complete series 1 and 2, and WWE, If You Think You Know Me, The Story of Edge. And also some Blu-ray premieres. We've got Earth 3D, we've got the Men in Black films, which they're either available individually or as a dual box set, that's for only for about £12.50 from Amazon. More American Graffiti, Pillow Talk, as you mentioned before, and Southland Tales, which has nothing to do with Southland, the excellent TV series. So that's everything for this first hour. In the second hour, we've got a mixture of video games and TV, starting with the top 10 games charts. But the final song for this hour comes from XTC, and Sergeant Rock is going to help me. So it's 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show, and on North Manchester's FM 106.6. And in this section, we have a look at the new video games releases coming out this Friday, starting with Diablo 3 on PC and Mac. And Diablo 3 is a definitive action role-playing game and a true continuation of the Diablo series. Players will create a male or female hero from one of five distinct classes: Barbarian, Witch, Doctor, or even Witch Doctor, Wizard, Monk, or Demon Hunter, each equipped with an array of spells and abilities. As these heroes adventure through rich and varied settings, unravelling an epic storyline and engaging in combat with hordes of monsters and challenging bosses, they'll grow in experience and ability and acquire items of incredible power. The game takes place on Sanctuary, a world of dark fantasy. Unbeknownst to most of its inhabitants, Sanctuary was saved some 20 years ago from the demonic forces of the underworld by a few brave and powerful heroes. Most of these warriors, who directly faced the armies of the Burning Hells and were fortunate enough to survive, went mad from their experiences. And most of the others have buried their haunted memories and pushed the horrors from their thoughts. In Diablo 3, players will return to Sanctuary to confront evil in its many forms once again. Diablo 3 will be a fitting sequel to Diablo 2, with the easy interface, fast-paced action, and visceral gameplay that Diablo players have come to expect and enjoy. It will also include many new features that will take the Diablo action RPG experience to the next level. Well, I won't be playing this because I'm not into role-playing games, but yeah, if it's for you, then you'll be glad to know that it's out. Also out this week, you have Starhawk on the PS3. It says, "Welcome to a new frontier on the PlayStation 3. Battle a band of merciless enemies on the ground, in vehicles, and in the air in Starhawk's epic single-player mode as gunslinger Emmett Graves. Experience action-packed 32-player online multiplayer modes. Team up with a friend in two-player offline split-screen play, or join forces with up to three other players via PlayStation Network in cooperative mode." That's assuming it hasn't been hacked this week. "Change the battlefield to your advantage with a new build and battle system that allows you to call down equipment, vehicles and fortifications from orbiting dropships." And I won't be playing that because I have a PlayStation 3, but, you know, if you do, then you can play that. Now, I've not got any information about these games, but on the PlayStation Vita, there's a couple of titles out this week called The Silent Hill Book of Memories and Supremacy MMA Unrestricted. But the game I'm sure you've all been waiting for, and which costs about a mere £7, and is out for the PC. It's called Bus Simulator 2. Oh yeah, yeah. I can tell you're getting excited now. Okay, all aboard as you start your career as a bus driver, plying your trade for fares. Take control of the wheel as you aim to become a public transport mogul and build a successful bus company. With 12 detailed buses to drive and a huge map featuring everything from the inner city to the harbour, villages and country roads, the choice of route network is yours. Create your business to best serve your customers and to generate profit. Will you continue to expand your fleet of service buses, or will you venture into the lucrative coach tour market? Excuse me. Navigate through city traffic and adhere to speed limits to carry your passengers safely while keeping to your chosen timetable. After successfully completing your route, return to the bus station and take the wheel of any service due to depart, or take some time to manage your business. Set ticket prices, usually expensive. Upgrade your fleet and enter into advertising deals along the road to transport tycoon. With the sale of tickets, voice announcements, custom schedules and real-time destination displays, bus simulation has never been so real. Yeah. Yeah, I can tell you're all just calm down. I've finished describing it now. You know, just forget, you know, Grand Theft Auto. Bus Simulator 2 is where it's at. I've got to go and have a lie down. I'm too excited. I'll have some music and then we'll have the video games news. This is 106.6.
106.6. 6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show, and we have now for you some video games news. Starts with the news that Draw Something pencils in pencils. pencils in adverts. Draw Something has begun to integrate advertised brands into the game through a new Zynga ad initiative. The National Hockey League is the first advertiser confirmed to take advantage of the initiative. And the NHL brought the use of hockey terms such as puck, zamboni, hat-trick and slapshot to appear as word prompts to draw, and has encouraged users to post their drawings on Twitter and Pinterest using the DrawNHL hashtag. Draw Something already has incorporated brands such as word prompts, with users asked to draw brands like Porsche, KFC and Doritos. Zynga found that users enjoyed drawing familiar brands, which inspired the new ad initiative. People love to draw the Colonel and Bags of Doritos, former OMG Pop head and now general manager for Zynga's New York office, Dan Porter, said. While there has been a positive response to drawing brands so far, it may be too little too late for the social drawing game. Last month saw a drop of over 4 million active daily Draw Something users, and that downward trend has continued into May. Not surprising, anyway, because, I mean, it's like I got into, about 3 months ago, Words with Friends, and yes, I really enjoy it, but you find after you've played a few games with people, they're just not interested in playing anymore. I still enjoy it because it's just a bit of a laugh. Certainly better than Angry Birds, which I played for a while with. I've got through all the original levels and then I played through some of Seasons and Rio, but after that, it's just too much the same. You know, there's just no excitement to it anymore. So, but, you know, there's a bit of thought to it with Words with Friends. So that's why I continue with that one. There's also the news that Nintendo's Shigeru Miyamoto has suggested that the PlayStation Vita isn't a strong product due to lack of games. Despite praising the machine's power, Miyamoto said that the Vita is lacking the right combination of software and hardware. It's obviously a very high-spec machine, he said, and you can do a lot of things with it, but I don't really see the combination of software and hardware that really makes it a strong product. He seemingly went on to compare it with the Nintendo 3DS, which also suffered from a lack of games during its first few months on sale. When we launched the 3DS hardware, we didn't have Super Mario 3D Land, and we didn't have Mario Kart 7, and we didn't have Kid Icarus Uprising. We were striving to have them all ready for the launch, but they weren't able to deliver them at that time. We were kind of hoping that people would, nevertheless, buy into the product, find 3DS hardware promising. Looking back, we have to say we realised the key software was missing when we launched the hardware. Miyamoto made the comments during a recent visit to the Louvre in Paris for the launch of the Nintendo 3DS interactive tour guide. Despite launching with the likes of Uncharted Golden Abyss and Wipeout 2048, the PlayStation Vita has failed to match sales of the 3DS. Now, I brought you a review of the PlayStation Vita a few weeks back, and it was featured in last week's compilation, but I didn't get to keep one long term. I'm tempted to buy one, but the lack of video output is still off-putting, and it makes me wonder if I should hold out for the, you know, like for another model, which has got perhaps, well, an X model, which has got the video output in it. Anyway, in the meantime, there's other news, such as Creative Assembly is working on a new Alien title, according to a job posting with the company. The studio posted a job listing for a multiplayer gameplay programmer who will be working on an Alien game for both current and next generation consoles. The description reads that the successful applicant will be working on a AAA multi-platform title on current and future generation consoles set in the Alien universe. The description does not specify which future generation consoles are being planned, though it does request experience developing on Xbox 360, PlayStation 3 and PC. The game was first revealed last year by publisher Sega, but it will be a third-person action title with a multiplayer component, now confirmed by the job listing. Creative Assembly is the studio best known for its strategy games in the Total War series, most recently Total War Shogun 2 on PC. Sega is also publishing Aliens Colonial Marines, a first-person shooter scheduled to release on Xbox 360, PlayStation 3 and PC this autumn, and a Wii U version is also in development. Now, 10 years ago, on May the 3rd, 2002, saw the release of the Nintendo GameCube in stores across Europe, almost 6 months after the US and 8 months after its debut in Japan. While it wasn't as well received by fans and critics compared to Nintendo's other systems, such as the NES, SNES and Nintendo 64, it was a unique console that generated a number of surprising releases. Nintendo let its hair down and experimented with familiar franchises. Super Mario Sunshine and Legend of Zelda Wind Waker took new approaches to platforming and visual styles respectively. Metroid went first person, and the incredible Metroid Prime series in Donkey Kong had a musical twist with the bongo-slapping Donkey Konga. It also established Super Mario Bros. And Super Monkey Ball as must-have franchises. It brought Animal Crossing to the West, and introduced a number of new and much-loved properties, including Pikmin and Eternal Darkness. While its lack of hardware innovations were glaring, the shift to optical discs was an essential one for Nintendo, while its connectivity with Game Boy Advance could be regarded as a precursor to the Wii U. And who can forget that it came with its own carrying handle, eh? Despite lagging behind in sales and popularity with the PS2 and Xbox, it had the last laugh when it became fully backwards compatible through the groundbreaking Wii, making the easiest of the bunch to revisit and enjoy today. I had one of those as well for a while, until I gave it to my nephew, and he enjoyed it for a while, but he's a big Nintendo fan. Okay, so that's all your video games news for this week. Have a bit of music, and then we'll have a look at some of the TV programmes watched, well, not just in the past week, but the past few weeks. This is 106.6. 106.6. Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever show, and this section we're going to have a look at some recent TV programmes watched. And I say recent, it's mostly, well, a couple from the past week, and some that go back over the last few weeks, just because I've got a bit of catching up to do. But I'm going to start off with The Sinking of the Concordia, caught on camera, which is a remarkable remarkable documentary uncovering harrowing scenes from one of the most tragic events in the cruise industry's history. When the Costa Concordia sank, the passengers were able to film what happened on their mobiles and video cameras. The film was made up of almost entirely just that footage, with no interviews, expert testimony or narration. The footage provides an extraordinary minute-by-minute anatomy of a disaster, capturing the reality of what happened in a way that is only possible in the 21st century. And I thought, well, it was okay, but nothing more. I'm sure you can still see it on 4OD. There were some interesting moments, such as when they showed someone filming a lifeboat being set down towards the water, only for it to have great difficulty in doing so and almost turfing out all of its passengers. But it just meandered on, doing more of the same, and at times it was like a Tory cabinet meeting with everyone stood round shouting, "What should we do? What should we do?" And it concluded by showing the captain had left the ship and was ordered to return. Something you'd have already seen if you watched the news at the time, so it was an interesting idea, but not great in its execution. Also along the way, we had Crucifixion, which was repeated in sort of mid-April after its original Easter slot. For centuries, an artist of all kinds, from Michelangelo to Martin Scorsese, Salvador Dali to Damien Hirst, and Andrew Lloyd Webber to Monty Python, they've attempted to convey the meaning of the crucifixion through their work. For many, it's been a deeply personal expression of belief. Now anatomist Dr. Gunther von Hagens, who made his name showing the world the wonders of the human body through his Body Worlds exhibitions, has decided to create a crucifix. The new piece, which he's been planning for over 6 years, is revealed in this documentary, which features interviews with leading art historians and theologians, among others, and examines the enduring iconic image of the crucifix. Now, for me, I found this a bit boring. It took far too long to get anywhere and just tried to go for the shock value of making a Jesus statue. The most interesting things were the fact that Gunther took a body, injecting some solidifying content into their veins such that they stood out, and then he dipped the whole body into an acid bath for 4 weeks, took it out, and there was only the blood vessels left. It was quite a sight. There was also some sadness at the end, where Gunther had become ill with Parkinson's disease and wasn't unable to see the unveiling of his creation, which bizarrely went without any media fanfare. So they displayed the statue at the end of it all, and that was about it. It was just like, what else? Not very much. It was a shame, really. What was also a shame was the fact anyone commissioned Derek, which is on Channel 4, and like all these, they'll be on 4OD still. Written and directed by Ricky Gervais, Derek was a bittersweet one-off comedy drama about a group of outsiders living on society's margins. Derek Knopes is a tender, innocent man whose love for his job and the people he cares for shines through. He's 49, adores animals, Royal Paris, Jesus, Deal or No Deal, Million Pound Drop and Britain's Got Talent, but his main hobby is autograph hunting. He works in a retirement home with his mate and landlord, Dougie. Derek cares deeply for old people because they're kind and funny and tell him stories about the olden days. Hannah is a care worker at the home and is Derek's best friend. She's smart, witty and hard-working, but unlucky in love, and like Derek, always puts other people first. Now, I thought that you know, before it started, that Derek would be the misfire of the year. And I was right. This was beyond pointless. Poor writing. Ricky Gervais completely miscast. And Carl Pilkington being Carl Pilkington. There were so many reasons to be bored by Derek. Don't get me wrong, I love the Office of Extras, but Life's Too Short was dreadful, and Derek was just tedious. There was no comedy in it, just drama. Well, no drama, rather. Just nothing, really. Also on last week was, and sort of on every week, is The Hoarder Next Door, on Thursdays at 9 o'clock on Channel 4. For everything on this is from Channel 4 at the moment. Following on from Obsessive Compulsive Hoarder a few weeks back, we now have a series following lots of people in this situation who weren't really having a proper life. We saw 55-year-old care worker Nigel, who couldn't move at all, so would visit best friend Jackie to cook some food and use her shower, since he hasn't seen one in his own shower in 8 months. Then we saw personal assistant and grandma Jenny, who was a collection of charity shop tat, ended up filling a house to the point where even her granddaughter was sick of it, especially with the fact that Jenny can't do anything about the cat dumping all over the place. Enter psychotherapist Stelios Kiosis, who claims he can sort out a hoarder's house in 6 weeks and finds that Nigel's partner Sid died 9 years earlier, and they were both collectors, with Nigel promising Sid that he would carry on with a collection of crockery with a willow pattern on. Jackie comes round to have a look and exclaims her shock about how he's never got his life back with his house. And since he likes to dress up in drag, he's only managed to clear some rubbish out after dressing up as Miss Miranda, which worked because Miranda doesn't have any connection with those things. Like any hoarder, he found it impossible to get rid of a lot of rubbish, but managed a large skip of it in one afternoon, and he had a meeting with Jenny where he was able to help her see the light as well. After that, well, the other thing that's been on this week is the Homeland finale. Now, 2 episodes into this series, I very nearly gave up. I thought it was just plodding along, and while Claire Danes was okay, Damian Lewis was just phoning it in. I still think it's been overhyped beyond... he's done an American accent before, and it just didn't seem any different. I was recommended to stick with it, and I did, and it certainly did improve. But overall, well, I didn't feel it was great, although it did have some great moments. The last 2 episodes were certainly the best, but I think it's been overhyped beyond belief. And when it comes to US imports, nothing beats Southland, a cop show set in Los Angeles, which hardly stars anyone famous. Well, that doesn't really matter, because they're all fantastic actors and work into very solid storylines. It's a shame it's relegated to more foreign and about 9 months after it's been broadcast in the US. For example, Season 4 just aired from January over there, so we won't see it here until October. I fully advise you to catch it from the beginning of Season 1 if you can, as there's a long story arc with all the characters as you watch Ben McKenzie from the OC go from rookie cop and upwards. Okay, so that's a catch-up with everything that's been on recently-ish. And a bit of music, and then we'll have a look at some programmes coming up in the next week. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, so you're back with the DVD Fever Show, with me, Don Robinson, and on North Manchester FM 106.6. And in this section, we'll have a look at some programmes coming up in the coming week. And okay, so it's been a little while since I've done this sort of thing, but in recent weeks, there's not been a lot of great stuff anyway, other than some shows which started several weeks ago, such as Four Rooms, which finishes tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. I've also been hooked on snooker over the last 2 weeks, which is the only sport I watch, so the FA Cup final can go and get stuffed. So the programme's coming up. Well, we've got, after the Hoarder Next Door, we've got Britain's Biggest Hoarders tonight at 9 o'clock on BBC One, which is a documentary meeting compulsive hoarders and looking at the strain the condition can put on their families. TV presenter Jasmine Harmon's mum, Fasula, is a compulsive hoarder. This secretive and often shameful psychological condition is putting a big strain on the entire family, and they are not alone. Up to 3 million British families are affected, but little is known about this disorder, and support is practically non-existent. In 2011, Jasmine tried to help her mum tackle the extreme clutter, which had taken over the entire family home and compelled a 13-year-old brother to move out. Despite a huge family effort, only a few rooms were tidied. Jasmine searched everywhere for solutions, and none seemed forthcoming. But now Jasmine thinks there may be hope. In this programme, she calls upon expert assistance to help her mum and other chronic hoarders combat the condition that is ruining their lives and those of their families. Also on is also on tonight on Channel 4 at 10 o'clock is More Sex Please We're British. Well, some sex would be some sex would be an idea, but yeah. Anyway, that's my problem. I'll deal with it. The UK sex toy market is worth an estimated £250 million, With retailers such as Boots, Tesco and Superdrug now stocking erotic toys, the market is set to grow and grow. More Sex Please for British goes behind the scenes one of the UK's most successful online sex toy businesses, Love Honey, a thriving operation that brings sexual pleasure to the women and men of Britain through the click of a button. Founded in 2002 by Neil Slateford and Richard Longhurst, Love Honey has seen its sales increase each year to £16 million. Love Honey reckon that nearly half the nation own a sex toy. And the other half are lying. Ba-dum-tish. This programme meets the people working at the company's HQ in Bath, a 70-strong crack team of sexperts who pick, pack and post more than 11,000 parcels a week, from adult toys and sexy lingerie to erotic literature and games. There's also, on Thursday, we've got Phil Spencer, Secret Agent, and Britain's property broom has been reduced to a whimper. With more homes going unsold than ever before, Phil Spencer wants to help get things moving again. In this five-part Peak Time series, Phil travels across the country, from Bromley to Birmingham and Shropshire to South Manchester, trying to get offers on houses that haven't been selling. In this first episode, Phil is in desirable Didsbury, where Marty and Keris are selling their four-bed semi-detached. Meanwhile, on the other side of the city, Christian and Laurie's semi is only half finished. With their busy family lives in a flooded property market, will Phil be able to make them complete the work so he can get a sale? However, I feel, hasn't this been on daytime already? A look back shows that there have been a lot of episodes of this during the day. But while it's not listed as a repeat, it's not really 100% clear whether we're getting whole new episodes or those revised repeats. Research on DigiGuide, a PC-based TV and radio guide, shows they are indeed brand new episodes, though. Anyway, have a bit of music, and then we'll have a look at some other programmes on this coming week. This is 106.6. 106.6. Okay, so you're back with the DVD Fever Show on North Manchester FM for the final section of the show this week. And we'll have a look at some more programmes coming on this week, starting with Episodes, which begins Series 2 this Friday at 10 o'clock on BBC Two, where Sean and Beverly's marriage has been ripped apart by Beverly's fling with Matt. And Matt's friendship with Sean appears to be beyond salvage. But as their sitcom Pucks premieres in the US, the three are forced to find a way to continue working together. The starring Matt LeBlanc, Tamsin Greig and Stephen Mangan, John Pankow, Kathleen Rose Perkins, Marcia Monroe. I watched the first episode or two of Series 1 and it was dire. Not in the least bit funny. How is this Emmy Award or Golden Globes Award winning? Oh, I think it was for Matt LeBlanc. I think he won the Golden Globe. God knows how. Anyway, so I won't be watching Series 2 because Series 1 was bloody awful. Then also we got on ITV at 9 o'clock on Monday, we got 56 Up, which is a three-part documentary continuing the acclaimed 7 Up series. Directed by Michael Apted, it's nearly 50 years since the programme first began, following a group of 7-year-old children, checking back on their lives every 7 years. In this instalment, the remaining participants are now 56 years old. How are they facing up to getting older and the changes in their lives? Well, we'll see when we watch the programme. I'd also recommend Grandma's House, which is back for a second series, and with episode 4 on this Thursday at 10 o'clock on BBC Two. It's an acquired taste, but if you like Simon Amstell being a bit odd, then this comes highly recommended. It's one of those comedies where not a lot seems to happen, and most of it seems to end up take place in the same room. But, you know, the fact that not a lot seems to happen is that's where the delights lie, if you just let it seep in. And if you enjoy the delights of 2012, then you'll like this too. A few films are on this, or a couple of films are on this coming week. There's Transporter 3, which is on Channel 4 at 10 o'clock on Saturday, where Jason Statham returns to his role as Frank Martin, the crook's courier of choice for the legally dubious goods. In this outing, he is employed by a group of environmental terrorists to drive across Europe with Valentina, the kidnapped daughter of a Ukrainian government minister. To make their journey more interesting, the pair are fitted with bracelets, which will explode if either strays too far from the car. They are, of course, also pursued by numerous brawny types intent on bringing Martin's continental jaunt to a violently abrupt conclusion. Starring Jason Statham, Natalia Rudakova, Francis Bailand, Robert Nepper, a.k.a. He was in Prison Break as Teabag, Jeroen Crabb and Alex Cobalt. This It's a good solid piece of entertainment. Absolute bloody nonsense, but you know, a good solid piece of entertainment. And also there's a premiere of Twilight New Moon on Channel 4, 8 o'clock on Sunday. Oh, and one of the worst films ever for me, The Bone Collector, Sunday at 10 o'clock on Channel 5 with, what's his name? God, Bennett. Denzel Washington, the man who can't act for toffee. For now, though, that's everything for this week, so thanks to everyone who's listened, and check out all the trailer links and gaming footage from the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVD Fever Show, and I'll be back for, next week for more movies, games and TV on the DVD Fever Show. Just one last song to go, and it's going to be, it was used at the end of Tomorrow Never Dies, but it's the song that should have made the proper theme tune. It's K.D. Lang and Surrender. This is 106.6.
106.6.